Hello, everyone. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you are listening to season four, episode three of Brody Sports Talk. That's what happens when you have some of these small episode numbers to start new seasons. We've had more seasons than we have had episodes in this season. It's kind of a beautiful thing now that we're past our four-year anniversary. As I said, though, I'm going to repeat myself. My name is Caleb Walgren. I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Derek Rusnick. You can find him on Twitter at Derek Rusnick, which is at DerekRusnick. So make sure you hit him up. He is a joy to talk to, and he will be a joy for you to chat with on Twitter. Derek, how are you doing today, my man?
Oh, I am so good, because in this podcasting platform that we are in right now, for weeks upon end, you have called me Captain Orange, and I am wearing a gray shirt. You're wearing an orange shirt. So today, I take my revenge as you're wearing the orange shirt. I am Derek Rusnick. Thank you for the shout out to my Twitter handle. Please reach out to me on there and tell me where I'm wrong, because generally I am wrong about sports related things.
So we are releasing this on July 6th, and this day in sports history, 20 years ago, Serena Williams defeated Venus Williams for her first Wimbledon singles title. Derek, did you watch this? Because I feel like this was probably peak of American interest in women's tennis, when you have the Williams sisters playing each other in a Grand Slam final. And if you weren't, that's okay. Where do you kind of feel it is as far as the greatness of Serena and Venus?
So I very much enjoyed this this age of tennis, and even the last, I hate to say this, the last 20 years of tennis that we have seen. I think that we have seen a resurgence. And I think those big name stars out there have really helped the American audience. I'll just say it that way, the American audience, to rally around a sport that could be, you know, seen as something that's country clubs and for people who do, people of means. The Williams sisters dominating the tennis world, both singles and in doubles, really does show that if you put your mind to it, and you work hard, you too can have Will Smith in your biopic.
Not a bad thing to have happen. Maybe not as good as it was at the time.
He literally won an Oscar for the role, and now no one remembers that he won the Oscar for it.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's transition. We are not a pop culture podcast. And we are not going to attempt to be. You do not want my dad takes on things that I think are interesting. Although I will admit to watching the movie Rise on Disney Plus. It's the story of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Completely off topic, though.
I cannot watch that, at least not around my wife, because she is a big Giannis hater because of what the Giannis did to the Celtics this year, took them to game 7. So I'm going to have to find a time where she's not around. So, because I'm very interested, because it's a basketball story. We do get to watch Hustle on Netflix a couple of times now, because she's a basketball fan, and we can both agree that, you know, that we can watch that movie, and I enjoy it.
If it makes you feel better, Derek, it's mostly about how Giannis got to the NBA, and not necessarily about what Giannis has done since he's been in the NBA. Don't know if that makes it better or worse.
She thinks that he is just a mean person. I'm like, I have never seen a mean bone in this guy's body. And he's just a very physical player, and he did a lot of physical play in the Celtics series. And I'm like, you beat him. Just move on. Let's not hate Giannis. Either way,
we're talking about Wimbledon. Was it like the game 5 stuff between him and Al Horford? Just curious.
Let's move on to Wimbledon, because I can go all day.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. We're moving to Wimbledon, and we're going to go ahead and go ladies first as we talk about who is still alive in that great tournament in London. So we do have one women's semifinal set. It is between a lady that I gave a shout out to last week when we were talking about favorites, Ons Jabeur from Tunisia. I think I had said from Turkey. My bad. I don't always recognize those flags. Red, crescent moon, star. Okay, so I got it a little off. But she made it to the quarterfinals at Wimbledon last year. She's in the semifinals this year against Tatiana Maria, who is ranked 103rd. So you have Ons Jabeur, ranked 3rd. Tatiana Maria of Germany, 103rd. And then on the other side of the bracket, the big matchup to keep an eye on is between Simona Halep and a young up-and-comer from American tennis. She's only 20 years of age, Amanda Anisimova. I'm not 100% sure I have that right.
Sounded pretty good.
I'm giving it a shot. And the other matchup that is on that top side is between two individuals that are fairly surprising entrants there. There is the number 17 seed, which is Elena Rybakina from Kazakhstan. And she is going to go up against the Aussie, Adjla Tomjanovic. Apparently she represents Australia, but it says that she was born in Croatia. So that also does not make it easy for me to try to decipher. Oh,
Tomjanovic. I apologize to this wonderful tennis player. We are butchering your name.
And her best tournament was also last year's Wimbledon, where she made the quarterfinals. So it's exciting for her to be there. Derek, obviously, we don't have a lot of the big names. We lost Iga Swiatek, who I think we both kind of were like, hey, she's number one. She's done really well earlier this year. Where are you at? Do you have a favorite, or are you just kind of like, who do you see making the women's final?
So out of the Jabeur Maria matchup, I think that you're going to go with scratch on that one and go with Jabeur. And from the other side, I think that we have Halep versus, though I think we no longer have an American in the field, and go with Halep on that one. And then Tomljanovic, I think, upsets Rybakina. And then we have a Halep.
Halep versus Jabeur final.
Jabeur, yeah. I am trying so hard, guys. On a final, I think that I'm going to take all the way to the end Halep. I don't know why she's 16 seed coming, you know, the 16th best in the field. I just have a good feeling about her. Now, Jabeur wins, there's not going to be, you know, I'm not going to cry a tear or anything like that. But we could definitely see new blood coming into winning a major championship because you don't have Swiatek in there, where she went 36, 37 straight matches. So I always like to go back and look at when some of the players that we think are the best now, when did they start really, you know, coming into their own? And, you know, so this could be the beginning of something that, especially with young players out there, 20-year-olds, stuff like that, that we could see marching through for the next, you know, 5-10 years.
I mean, Simona Halep does have a history. She has won Wimbledon before in 2019. Yeah. She's a former world number one. I don't think that she's a good pick to have there. I definitely agree.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, I'm going to go with my guns. I'm going to say Ons Jabeur wins the final. And I'm going to go ahead and have her getting the win against Amanda Anisimova. I'm going to go ahead and put the American there. You know, She's 10 years younger than Halep. Maybe Halep, how far she's gotten in the tournament so far, she'll be a little bit tired out. I can't say that for sure. Clearly, I don't count that against like Nadal or Djokovic or anything. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens. Anytime we have good tennis happening, that's what I want. And I'm excited to see what happens on that ladies' side of the draw. Let's go to the gentlemen's side of the draw. The semifinal that we have set there is between the 1 seed Novak Djokovic against the 9 seed, who is Cameron Norrie. Cameron is definitely going to have the crowd behind him. He represents the UK. He will be in the UK. It is a match I recommend watching because when I have watched players for the UK at Wimbledon, even when it's like opening matches for, you know, Andy Murray past his prime, they are so lopsidedly for that person. And I think that you have him in the semifinal, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting at center court. The other side, a little bit lopsided perhaps, we have a quarterfinal matchup between Christian Garin and Nick Kyrgios. And the other part of that is between Taylor Fritz, who is the lone American left in the tournament, and he is the number 11th player overall. And he is going up against the big dog, that is Rafael Nadal. I don't think that's actually a nickname for Rafael Nadal. and who is the 2 seed in this tournament. And I do have to double check something here real quick. But Derek, while I'm double checking, you tell me where you think things are going to end up here.
Yeah, so for me, I'm taking Kyrgios over Garin and Nadal over Fritz. Unfortunately for me, this looks like a scratch matchup going straight to the final, where I think Nadal beats Djokovic handily. For our other host that is on assignment, he is not a big Djokovic fan, and so I always take the other side of that for his sake. And so I'm taking Nadal winning Wimbledon gentleman's side.
I'm going to go ahead. If I had to pick someone who wasn't the top 2 seeds,
yeah,
I would go with Nick Kyrgios of Australia. He actually was part of a doubles team that won the men's doubles at the Australian Open. So I think he's playing some of his better tennis right now. Also, this is his time back in the quarterfinals at one of these majors for the first time since 2015. Wow. Welcome back, dude. Like, I know that he's sometimes been known as the bad boy of tennis. Part of that is, I think when he was getting really good, he was still, you know, 19 and 20. It's tough to focus on. Let's face it, 19 and 20-year-olds don't always make the best decisions, let alone in the heat of the moment when they're playing a match against some of the best tennis players in the world.
True.
So I think it'd be a great redemption arc for him to come and possibly win his first major here. I'm sure the media would have a heyday, but I'm going to go ahead and say, give me Rafael Nadal going for the calendar slam. I can't say it enough times. I'm so excited that we have the potential of it happening. And I think that it will be over Djokovic. I'm going to say Nadal over Djokovic in 4 sets.
I think we're both on that same train where I think Nadal is just going to barnstorm into the final.
Well, should we switch from tennis to some summer football?
Yeah, let's. I was wondering how you're going to transition.
I didn't have a good word for it.
Yeah,
I didn't.
So, you know, when you're a really good tennis player, you've been there a long time. You're a stallion on the court. Speaking of stallions, We had the USFL championship game versus the Philadelphia Stars. I could have went Stars in Wimbledon and not. Yeah, either way, we had the Philadelphia Stars. I tried to make the Stallions work because I wanted the horsey reference for the Broncos. But Philadelphia Stars, Birmingham Stallions. We had a really close game with Birmingham coming through for the win. They have been the best team all year long. 33-30 in a game that I, in particular, thought was over around halftime because it was a 20-9 game, and that Birmingham would just they have both Scarborough from Alabama. They were running the ball really well. That they would just grind it out the rest of the game. But it turned out that Case Cookus, the Stars quarterback, just threw the ball all over the place and made some amazing plays. Unfortunately, the reason why the Stars lost was Cookus got hurt. But they made a comeback. The Birmingham Stallions were just a little too much, and at the end of the game, they put up a touchdown and took home the championship. So, Caleb, now that we've talked about, we've seen the whole league, we've seen a championship game. I know you were glued to the TV every time there was a game. And so what are your thoughts on this inaugural USFL season? Understand that everyone has said there is going to be a second season, that Fox was okay with it, NBC was supporting it. The league itself seemed to do well enough. What do you think about the USFL, and what changes do you think they need to make?
I think that we almost need to have less known names from their college career and more of these unknown players that maybe somehow went under the radar. For example, Philadelphia Stars. Case Cookus. I hadn't heard of him. He played his college ball at the University of Northern Arizona, the Lumberjacks. Very talented player, very good player. Thought it was great to see him out there doing his thing. Another player, Jordan Sewell. He had 2 touchdown receptions for the Stars in this game. He's from Southern Oregon. These are players that we never would have seen. We would have never heard of if it were not for an upstart league like the USFL. I think the big thing about it happening, finishing the year, I'm going to buy in a little bit more next year. A lot of that is because I needed to see that it could make it through. We've had too many of these leagues start and then like fold a couple of weeks in. Alliance of American Football, I'm looking at you. Speaking of alliances in regards to anything with football, that's just not ever a good thing. We'll see more about that later. But I really liked it. I like seeing some of these young players get a chance and possibly get a chance at their NFL dreams, because who knows what's going to happen with teams and injuries with training camp around the corner. They're clearly in great shape. They just finished their season. The NFL's needed a developmental league for years so that they don't have to have everyone on practice squads and getting picked up from each other that way. I think it's all a positive. Derek, any comments you have on that?
Yeah, so I have a couple of things that the USFL had did really, really well. All of the coaches that for the USFL are known bigger name coaches that have some sort of NFL experience, and all of them were developmental guys, were guys that you know what you're going to get when you put it out there. They know how to call plays. They know time management. They know about they know how to teach how to put together a football team and how to go through a week. That being said, we need not just a developmental league for players, but for young up-and-coming coaches. So this is going to be a really good league that if it sticks around, you know, next year XFL is going to be around, and it's got a alliance with the NFL itself. So I don't know if there's going to be the wide variety of talent that is going to come from the USFL. Something that I think that the USFL did not do very well is they started 3 weeks after you met these players. They started in March, and they had like 3 week training camp, and then they put players out and they started playing games. There was not enough time for cohesion. If you watch the first couple weeks, the defense was vastly superior to the offense. There wasn't much in the way of big scoring games. Quarterback play wasn't great because they didn't have that connection with the receivers yet, or knowing what the receivers run, knowing what routes to run, stuff like that. You need a longer training period, or some sort of time period where these guys are getting on the same page. Because by the end of the year, you had what looked like a lower to middle NFL game, where a 33-30 game, you had big touchdown runs, you had some really well thrown touchdown passes. So I think it's coming along, but I think they definitely need more time together in training camp.
I think that's fair. Let's switch it up. Let's go from the pigskin. Let's go to the hardwood. Derek, NBA free agency. I know we didn't talk a ton about the draft or anything. Summer league is starting, but I really want to kind of focus in on free agency. That's where the biggest movers and shakers are seen. What are your opening thoughts, or what players or teams do you want to talk about?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I'm going to talk about the guy who got absolutely paid the very first day of a free agency. That's Bradley Beal out of the Washington Wizards. He has been around on that team forever. He's the name that's in town on a team that's never really been super great. He's been there with John Wall. He's been there with Westbrook, and he's never left. I am sure he could have, found somewhere else, asked for a trade, certain KD-related players. But he goes out here, signs a 5-year deal with $251 million, $50 million a year. I would like to stay loyal to my teams and get paid $251 million. Any jump out to you, Caleb?
I mean, I feel like in general we saw some what I'm going to call lower level teams pay their guys. Yeah. I think it was more of a, we've seen what's happened when players in some small markets kind of get frustrated and upset that they don't have a chance at a championship. But when you see people like Darius Garland with the Cavs, which the Cavs were a lot better this past year, so maybe that's not the best example. Or you see something like Zion Williamson getting big money from the Pelicans. They may not be superstars, but Darius Garland, he got the 5-year, $193 million max extension. Mm-hmm. I know Zion Williamson also got 5-year, $193 million, said it could be up to $231 based off of incentives and different things. It feels a bit odd to me because they're still unproven commodities, but at the same point, you're getting these players more into their prime. You're giving them your commitment, and especially in a player like Zion, I don't understand who dislikes that deal. The Pelicans keep a star because you got to have a star in order to be relevant for TV money. Zion, who's been hurt a lot, hasn't really had a chance to prove himself, and he's getting a super max deal, or like the max deal that he can get. And like, it's a win-win. And so the NBA just keeps pouring money into these contracts from TV deals, and you're seeing players happily take those checks, whether it's a big market team or a small market team.
So what I've been looking at, like the SpotTrack site that we like to go to pull up our stuff, just looking at all of the undrafted free agents that got paid, like who were never, they weren't drafted or anything like that, where let me see. I just had the list. Of course, I clicked on the wrong thing. But there are some players out here that didn't get drafted, but they got some good amount of money from their respected team. I'll just highlight someone else that I was looking at, and that's Kevon Looney out of Golden State. He was a big contributor in the championship run. No one's going to pick him out of a lineup, and no one's going to say, oh, he's a guy we have to build around. But, Curry, you have to have that center, because you have Curry and you have Draymond on that team, and they're all going to do their thing, but there's still going to be that big man in the middle there. And so he signed a 3-year, $25.5 million deal for $8.5 million per year. That's a really good price for a guy like that. So really excited to see what we have left on the guys that are out there, where the trades are going to happen. I'm sure there's going to be some upcoming trades on players who are out there that aren't going to be on their same teams.
So, Derek, I actually have a mock trade I want to run by you and have you tell me how much you love it and or hate it for either team.
Okay.
The Nets trade Kevin Durant.
What?
To the Trailblazers.
Okay.
They give up Eric Bledsoe and Anfernee Simons.
Okay, so
money works. So
money works.
Okay. Yes, because Bledsoe's getting 19.3 a year, and Anfernee Simons is getting 22.3 a year. And I'm assuming the Blazers will have to add like picks or something to that as well.
I mean, but, you've got to.
Who would want to see Dame and Kevin Durant in the West? Just kind of being a wild, ruly team.
Okay, so something that I ran across the last couple of days. Who wants picks in the Kevin Durant trade? There's, unless they are in 2030, I don't want picks in the Kevin Durant trade, because he's been good everywhere he's gone. Those picks are going to be in the 20s. Like, if you're lucky, they're going to be as low as 20. They're probably going to be 25, 26, 27 in that range. So first round picks aren't really going to do anything. They're not going to bring you big name players unless Kevin Durant all of a sudden doesn't know how to play basketball. So if I'm looking at, I'm trying to get player and like known players back rather than draft picks. I would love to see Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard play together. So I'm going to go ahead and hit that as a approved trade and see what happens.
We got a deal. Yes. Woo. Speaking of players playing places you may not expect, let's talk about the recent college football news that has hit the landscape since we last recorded.
And that, oh, really, Caleb? What could that be?
That is definitely, I would call, the cornerstone of the Pac-12 and another team in the same area going to the Big Ten, coming in 2024. Tough for travel, The closest team to them is my beloved Nebraska Cornhuskers. And that is not close for those of you who are trying to track. Not close at all. It's the start of rumbles that are going to be shaking up college football across the board. Lincoln Riley, once again, finding out that his team is possibly going to another conference. Now he just needs to go join the Boise State Broncos and see what happens there. We're an Oklahoma podcast. I got to take a shot at Lincoln Riley, even if I don't necessarily love OU. I think it's required by, like, when I go get my driver's license. If you're given a chance to take a shot at Lincoln Riley, will you do so? Yes. Okay. It feels weird.
I don't think you even said what happens. So UCLA and USC are going to the Big Ten
in 2024.
That is that's the headline.
Sorry.
You were talking about the cornerstone of the Pac-12, and then you went into the Nebraska stuff. So USC, UCLA are going to the Big Ten in 2024. So tell me your thoughts about LA teams going to the Big Ten and what that means.
It means the Big Ten's contract is up for renewal and they want to make that money. I think it was a former USC running back that said that they were making bread out there. That was an old TMZ video. Very old reference from me. That's what happens when you get me making random dated references. Anyway, they said that USC and UCLA made about $20 million last year under the Pac-12 TV money. With them going to the Big Ten, the Big Ten is reportedly going to give every team $80 to $100 million a year in TV money. That's what it all comes down to.
Yeah.
No one cares about who your rivalry is. No one cares about who your friends are. No one cares that we're not going to get to see USC play the Ducks on a regular basis. It doesn't matter that this practically destroys the history of the Rose Bowl because you can't have like a UCLA Washington State Rose Bowl used to be called a conference game. It's just not like Michigan playing at USC in the middle of October just isn't as interesting as the Rose Bowl was. And while I love the pageantry and the tradition of college football, I think this is one step of many. I don't think that this is like Texas and OU left last year. USC and UCLA are leaving this year. Just let the dominoes keep falling. Who knows what's going to happen? So many rumors are out there about Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State. Basically, if they're going to go anywhere. Not to mention that everyone wants to get Notre Dame, even though I don't really care about Notre Dame. It's chaos. It's chaos, and I somewhat feel like the NCAA is to blame on this. I don't know how they drop the ball on everything, but they do drop the ball on everything. So if players want to play where the money is made, they're going to enter the transfer portal and go to the SEC or the Big Ten because the TV money is there. And if you're on TV more, you can get those NIL deals. The rich are going to get richer. I don't see this ending anytime soon. Derek, what are your kind of thoughts or where do you come across on this? Because I feel like I went on a little mini rant there on USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten.
Yeah, so I love your mini rants when you do them because it shows your passion for things. So I think this is a big mess up when it comes to the Big Ten. I know you're getting big name stuff out there. You're going to get TV deals, all that kind of thing, but there's no such thing as being able to create an NFL type out of college football. There's just way too many schools that have too many sports. So if let's just take the Big 12, for example, because we live in Oklahoma and that's what I know. So if you're building your conference for football, you are never going to have Kansas in there. But if you are building your conference for basketball, you're always going to have Kansas in there. And that's the same thing when it comes to this. If a lot of the Big Ten schools are really good at football, and if that's what you're building around, great. But I don't know if you're going to have Michigan, USC basketball, and it draws the eyes of what you want, you know, what that you're wanting, because the time difference is so big. Either the Big Ten schools are going to, you know, it's going to start at 9 a.m. Big Ten time, or vice versa. It's going to be really early for the West Coast, and no one's going to watch it because it's Penn State versus USC. That being said, two good things come out of this. My hope is that the Big 12 takes up as many schools as they can get as a third-tier power conference. And, you know, Oregon is a pretty good football school. Washington has been there before. Four teams are coming over in the next couple of years to the Big 12 anyways, and BYU, USF, Louisville, you know, so those guys are coming over anyways. We might as well, in a year or two, put together like a 20-team conference of like a lower tier. That being said, I think sooner or later there's going to be the Big Ten, SEC are going to have a national football champion, and everybody else is going to be a Division II type. There's just going to be the national champion, top four, whatever. It's just going to come, you know, SEC champion versus Big Ten champion, and that's just going to be the national champion because you're just not going to have a shot anymore. My hope is this is the nail in the coffin of the NCAA, and the schools are able to figure it out in conference play, basically. You figure out some way to make a 20-team Big Ten, a 20-team SEC, and then everybody else, basically, on smaller conferences. I see that's coming by 2030, probably, that the NCAA goes away.
I mean, I think the real down-the-line question is, when do teams start basically taking teams out, saying you're not providing the revenue, sure, or you're not getting it taken care of? Like, Illinois, sorry, we don't want you anymore. We're going to replace you with someone else. Like, kind of like you said, if with the SEC, they have Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is not a football school.
Yeah.
It doesn't have great football facilities. It doesn't really match the word I wanted to use was temperature, but it doesn't have the ambiance of other SEC schools. It's not going to be the Grove. It's not going to be between the hedges. It's Vanderbilt. When does the SEC say, you know what, we can get rid of Vanderbilt and we can get someone who's going to make us more money like Clemson?
Yeah.
Like that's when, hey, thanks for being part of our mega conference. Now we're going to cut bait.
Hey, we already have Florida. Let's go get Florida State. Hey, we already have Florida State, or we already have Florida. Let's get Miami. You figure that you
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a matter of when, not if. I think that, like you said, 20-team conferences could be 24-team conferences. I don't know. Well, they don't have to have divisions. So you can play a conference championship game with whatever criteria you want. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we have conference playoffs to get to a conference championship game, because the conferences are so dang big.
Well, see, that's where the whole line was, okay, we can't go to 16-team playoff because they're going to be playing too many games, and these are still students. These are student athletes. And I think sooner or later, especially the SEC, is just going to flip off the NCAA and say, no, we're going to have a 8-team playoff within our own conference, and or a 10 team, something like that, and then the top two get buys. I don't know how, but you're going to have like a 2024 team conference, like you said, and Big Ten, SEC are going to have playoffs, and so yeah, you're right. It's going to happen sooner or later.
I mean, that or we don't have any conference championship game. The conference championship no longer becomes something to be desired, and you have like a 16-24 team overall playoff, more like Division II. It's not going to be the BCS with the computers trying to figure it out. That's all I know for sure. We're never going back to the BCS.
Well, I think they're going to try to bring about the an NFL style where you have this amount of teams, these amount of teams make the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. And then you, like I said, SEC, Big Ten champions go up against each other for a national champion. It just makes too much sense.
Yeah, it's going to be chaos. And that's really all that we have to talk about in this episode today. If you like it, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. I've noticed that we've been getting a ton of listeners from there lately. I think it's somewhere between like 80 to 90 or 90+% of our listens are coming from Apple Podcasts, but no one's left us a review lately. You know, when you're listening, just go ahead and leave us that beautiful 5-star review because we are a 5-star podcast. Please, please, and thank you. And if you don't like Apple Podcasts, you can use our Linktree, linktr.ee/BrodyTalk. So on behalf of Derek, my name is Caleb, and we are not going to be leaving this podcast anytime soon to leave you high and dry for a better podcasting network. So thank you all for listening, and y'all have a good one. Bye.
Bye, guys.